702. The Naked Scientist.
It's 21 minutes to 3 o'clock. It's Monday, and that means we're taking your science-related questions with Chris Smith, the Naked Scientist. So this final segment really is devoted to you. Chris, good afternoon.
Oh, hi, Azza. How are you?
I'm very good, thank you. I thought of you when I saw the story, the latest coming out of China, that the number of people infected with that new virus that we talked about last week actually tripled over the weekend. And they're saying this outbreak has gone outside of Wuhan, which is where it originated, and now it's spread to other major cities.
Yeah, well, obviously details are emerging only slowly, and this is something China are a bit notorious for. They did the same thing in 2002-03 with SARS. I think they're slightly more open this time, but not much, because they tend to spot these things, do their own investigations, and then they kind of let the rest of the world know a bit late to the party. Mm-hmm. And I'm slightly concerned that the same could be playing out here, where actually this thing has spread further. The reason there's been a sudden escalation in cases is not necessarily just that it's spread ferociously. It could be that now we know what we're looking for, they're testing more. Yeah. So the more you look, the more you find. So it could be a range of factors, but it's going to be one to watch. At the moment, the number of people who have become grossly unwell, as in died, is quite low. Mm-hmm. There's two cases of fatalities at the moment, but those are the ones we know about. But it's still two people. It means a lot to those two people. So it's going to be interesting to see how this goes. I mean, I'm keeping an open mind, but what we do know at the moment is this does appear to be a new coronavirus. Coronaviruses are common causes of respiratory infections. SARS, the sudden or severe acute respiratory syndrome virus, which came out in 2002-03, that was another member of this family. The virus we call MERS-CoV, which is the Middle Eastern respiratory syndrome, which is carried by camels, originally got into them from bats, and occasionally causes severe chest problems in people. That's also a coronavirus. Mm-hmm. So these viruses have a track record of doing this. We're just going to have to wait and see now what happens and what countries are going to do to react to this.
Yes,
what they're going to do in terms of looking at screening and so on.
And I see the Chinese Lunar New Year holidays are coming up, so there will be a lot of movement, and this is exactly what a viral outbreak needs.
Yes, very good point. That obviously the thing that helps viruses to spread are lots of susceptible people getting together and then being very mobile. And we think actually the same thing triggered the 1918 Spanish flu pandemic, because lots of people were mobile around the world because of World War One, and that helped to then spirit the virus off all around the world and facilitate its spread. So you're absolutely right that with the New Year celebrations coming up, that people flux could help to accelerate this. So it's certainly going to be something we need to keep an eye on.
Right. Let's go to Keen. Keen is joining us from Benoni, and you can also give us your call on 011-883-0702. It's all about science. It's all about those science general or even deeper science questions with Chris Smith this afternoon. Hello, Keen.
Yes, hi, Chris. Can you please explain in layman's terms what is entropy?
Right.
Hello, Keen. Well, the person who came up with this was Boltzmann, and I think he was an Austrian chemist and physicist. And he had this incredible insight that when you look at the universe and the way it works, everything is moving towards a state of more disorder. In other words, being more spread out, more disorganized. If you take a pile of bricks and you stack them up tidily, you've reduced their entropy. If you come along and kick over the pile of bricks and spread them all over the place, you've increased their entropy. Now, that generally means that if there is an increase in entropy, it's much more likely that that thing is going to happen. So when we look at a chemical reaction, if it leads to an increase in entropy, it's very likely to happen. If it doesn't lead to an increase in entropy, then it's less likely to happen, or you've got to have some compensatory increase in entropy to make it happen. How can that happen? Well, for instance, you could say make two liquids become a solid, but in the process, perhaps they'll get hot. And if they get hot, they give some energy to some particles in the air and make those particles spread out more. And in that way, they've increased the disorder, and therefore there is a positive entropy change. So in other words, the universe is always going towards a state of more disorder, greater entropy, and we can reverse that process, but you've got to do work to do that, and in the process you're actually increasing the entropy of something else. So entropy is a way of thinking about the likelihood that a reaction will happen, and entropy only moves in one direction, towards more disorder, unless there's some kind of compensation that in turn is paid back by an overall increase in entropy.
Keen?
Thank you very much. Yeah, that was one of the best descriptions I've heard of it. I can actually remember that.
Layman enough. I agree with you. Keen, thank you for your great question.
Thank you.
Wonderful. Chris, that was a job well done. So we're taking your calls. Let's take a quick break on 011-883-0702 and 31702 for your SMSs. And just to let you know, Chris, after this, there's a question from Sitsiro, one of our listeners. She texted it in saying, can Chris explain why we open our mouths when applying mascara? So I'll read out the rest after the break.
702, The Naked Scientist.
It's 13 minutes to 3, so we don't have much time left with The Naked Scientist. But earlier I'd asked this, teased the starter of Sitsiro's question, and she says, can The Naked Scientist explain why we open our mouths when applying mascara? Could it be the same reason why we lower sound when trying to park a car in reverse or parallel park or when we're lost?
I think the reason for this is there are several possible plausible explanations. One is that, and probably the simplest is going to be the right one, when you open your mouth, you stretch the skin out on your face. If you stretch the skin out on your face, then you actually make it easier to be more accurate with putting things around your eyes because other bits of skins and wrinkles and stuff doesn't get in the way. Right. So it could be partly that. The other one is a more neurological answer, and that is the way that our muscles are controlled by the brain. When the brain coordinates a movement, it doesn't just activate one discrete set of muscles to make a movement. What it tends to do is it facilitates a whole group of muscles that tend to make a contribution towards movement in a certain direction. So when you open your eye wide in order to spread things out so you can see what you're doing and put the mascara on, the same muscles that also do opening type maneuvers elsewhere in the body and around your face are also going to be a bit more activated. So if you're not careful and you're not actually opposing that movement, there's going to be a tendency that you're going to make the same sorts of movements. So as you open your eyes wide, the orbicularis oculi muscles are contracting. You're going to do the same thing to your mouth muscles and open those wide as well.
Oh.
So I think it's probably a combination of you do it because it makes life easy, and also physiologically, it's what your nervous system encourages your muscles to do. When you make a movement in one direction, you co-activate lots of other groups of muscles in order to stabilize the movement you're going to make. And that, I think, is why you tend to open your mouth as well.
Okay. Next, we go to Gareth in Pretoria East. Good afternoon, Gareth.
Hi, Daniel.
Hi.
I had a I think it's a very simple question, but I'd like to understand the complex sort of routine behind it. Basically, how do clouds form? Because I understand that the higher you go, the lower the boiling temperature of water gets. But I don't see seas boiling to evaporate water into the clouds. And then once it gets up there, I mean, it's minus 10 degrees once you get up to cloud level. How does it sort of stay and evaporate it? Steam cloud, essentially, and then what triggers the downpour of that rain?
So how do clouds form, Chris?
Yeah, well, on average, every square meter of the Earth's surface is being heated by the sun at the rate of about 1 kilowatt. So that's like having a one bar electric fire spraying on one square meter of the surface of the ocean. Now, what that does is put energy into the sea. Now, the energy isn't evenly shared out by all the particles. They're randomly passing energy backwards and forwards among themselves.
Okay.
So just by chance, some of the water molecules at some points in time will have enough energy to break the bonds holding them onto the other water molecules, and they become a free molecule that's water vapor.
Mm.
So warm water obviously has more energy than cold water. This is going to happen more often. So when you have a nice warm sea surface being hit by sunlight at the rate of about 1 kilowatt, then some water molecules are going to be broken free from the water and they're going to go up in the air. Because the water is warming the air above the water, that air is less dense because it's expanded, and less dense things tend to be rising upwards, because if the water's less dense, if the air is less dense, it's going to be displaced by colder air, which is more dense, coming in below it. So that's going to push it up. So you're going to push a rising column of warmed air containing water molecules upwards. As they go upwards, the air is expanding because it's feeling less pressure, because the air above it is getting thinner. and there's therefore less massive air pushing down, therefore the pressure is lower. If the pressure is lower, that air is going to expand, and as a gas expands, it gets colder. So at a certain point in the journey upwards, the air temperature is going to become sufficiently cold that these water vapour molecules are not going to stay as steam anymore. They're going to join up with other water molecules and make droplets of water and then ice crystals. And they're going to do that roughly all at the same time. And because there's loads of them all in one place, they're going to form big loads of droplets of water, and that's a cloud. But because there are these updrafts coming from below that's pushing upwards, it's holding everything up. Now, as that material moves towards a coastline, for example, if there's a mountain in the way and air coming off the sea is being deflected up over the mountain, it's going to try and push the clouds higher. But what will often happen is that the clouds can't make that journey. You can't sustain that much water being held up. The updrafts are not strong enough, so it rains. And the rain comes down out of the cloud. If it starts as ice, it melts on the way down. Some of it re-evaporates, some hits the ground as liquid water. And that liquid water then goes into rivers and back to the sea, and the cycle continues.
I wish my school teacher had put it that way. I'm sure wherever our caller was, he also agrees. Thank you for that explanation. I could see it visually. I think you painted a really great picture, Chris. Jacques in Four Ways. Hello, Jacques.
Hi there. How are you?
Good. How are you?
I'm good, thank you. I lost my taste about 2.5 weeks ago, my sense of taste.
What happened?
I don't know. I just one day it was not there.
And you can't taste all kinds of tastes and flavors? Nothing?
I can get a little bit of sweetness, but that's about it.
Okay.
And I had been on a course of antibiotics over New Year, and I went to the dentist for a filling that same week. But it's just quite weird.
So you want to know how to get it back?
How to get it back and perhaps what's caused it.
Yes, and what's life like without taste, Jacques?
It's horrible.
Can imagine.
I love my food.
Yes, yes. How does he get it back, Chris?
Hello, Jacques. I'm sorry to hear about your predicament. Most of what we call taste is actually smell. And this is because when you put food and other things, drinks, in your mouth, the warmth of your mouth drives off what are called volatile molecules. These are light molecules, small molecules, which are contained in the food, and they rise up the back of your throat to your nose. They go up into the nose, and at the top of the nose is something called the olfactory epithelium. It's a sheet of tissue projecting through which are sprays of nerve endings decorated with receptors, which are effectively chemical docking stations for the different molecules that we can smell. And when those odours which have come out of your mouth go up there, they dock with these receptors, activate them, and this sends discharges via the nerves they're connected to into the olfactory part of the brain, the smelling area of your brain, which then puts together that bouquet of different odours that it's registering and says, ah, that is the smell of X, Y, or Z.
Mm-hmm.
Now, that proximity of that tissue to the nose and to the rest of the olfactory epithelium means that you're very vulnerable there to your nose getting clogged up or infected with viruses and other things and damaging that sheet of tissue, and in the process damaging those nerve endings, either because they're completely covered in mucus and the smells can't get at them, or the epithelium, the layer itself, is damaged by viruses growing in it, and that causes the cells to be destroyed, luckily temporarily, because there are stem cells there that can regenerate these things, and they then reconnect with their targets in the rest of the pathway that carries those nerve messages into the brain. And they're one of the few examples of how the nervous system can regenerate really very effectively. And so what's likely happened in your case, and you did mention, Jacques, that you had had some antibiotics recently. They were presumably given for a reason. Perhaps you'd had an upper respiratory infection or a virus which was responsible for this. The other more remote possibility is that I don't know what those drugs were, but perhaps this is a drug reaction, and perhaps one side effect is that it's affected your sense of smell, and now the course of those is gone. Because this has an amazing regenerative ability, the olfactory system, hopefully it'll come back. The other reason why you can lose your sense of smell sometimes doesn't sound like it's appropriate here, but it's trauma. People who have a head injury, sometimes if you shake your head up a lot, you can shear off the connections between the nerves in the top of the nose and the rest of the smelling pathway, and they don't grow back. And if you lose those connections, you lose the ability to smell. But we end up saying, I've lost my sense of taste, because most of what we call taste is smell.
Right. Jacques, there's your answer.
Thank you. My sense of smell seems fine, though.
So,
because most of what we call smell is taste. Mm-hmm. So I'm a bit surprised by what you've just said.
Well, maybe he's misdiagnosing what he's experiencing, Chris.
Yeah.
That maybe it's not a loss of taste. There is a change after the antibiotics and the dentist's visit and so on, but it's probably not a loss of taste. But
that's true, but yeah. Hopefully the dentist wasn't a butcher. It was a dentist.
yeah, absolutely. Well, we do have to leave it there. We won't get time for all the questions that we got in, and so many of them being texted as well. Oh, Karabo, you're saying we've got time? Ah, okay. No, my bad. Thank you, Karabo. She's notifying me to say we actually do have. So let me get to some of the other questions. One says, is there a substance, Haiza and Chris, is there a substance that which can be used as a replacement for tar, something that would resolve the pothole issue permanently? This one comes from Puloso in Bedford.
Well, tar, also known as bitumen, is one of the byproducts of the oil industry. When we refine crude oil, one of the really heavy elements which are produced in a fractional distillation column at a refinery are these really heavy fractions, which are long chains of carbon-rich molecules, which have a really high boiling point, really sticky. And so those are used for road surfaces for all the obvious reasons. They're hard-wearing, they're tough, you can heat them up, they become plastic and easy to deform, but then when they get cold again, they stick everything together nicely and they throw water off. So they're a really good way of keeping the road self-drained. Now, what people are doing is saying, well, actually, we have a problem with carbon and plastic pollution and carbon emissions. Mm. Can we box clever? And there's an industry in the UK who are turning old plastic into road surface, and they're doing it by mixing some of the ground up plastic in with bitumen that goes into road surface, so you actually save money on the crude oil products that you're using and you find a safe home for the plastic that you would otherwise put into landfill or have to burn. Mm-hmm. So yes, there are some alternatives. Unfortunately though, you've still got to have some bitumen and you people to go and find the potholes and fill them up. And that seems to be half the problem in many countries.
Yes, there is a project here in one of our provinces for a particular stretch of road to be tarred with this combination that you've just described. Because we have, a lot of potholes on our roads, whether in the cities or in the smaller towns. So we need a long-lasting solution. Let's see if this one and what you've described there, Chris, holds up. So that's one of the growing alternatives to bitumen. Thank you so much, Chris.
Pleasure. Thanks for having me.
See you soon. Yes, that's The Naked Scientist. Next week, Monday, I've got so many of your questions here. I do archive them. I file them, put it on file. If we don't get to ask them, especially those that you've sent via SMS and the WhatsApp line.